Using seismic activity to probe the interior of Mars, geophysicists have found evidence for a large underground reservoir of liquid water, enough in fact to fill oceans on the planet's surface. And Water on Mars is the title of a public lecture hosted by Astronomy Ireland next week. Its chairman is David Moore, a regular contributor to this programme, and David joins me on the line now. And good afternoon to you, David.
Good afternoon.
The importance of this discovery, Water on Mars, as I say, it is the title to the public lecture next week, more of which anon, but why should we be excited by this, or why are scientists perhaps more accurately excited by this?
Well, if humans are ever going to go to Mars, water is going to be a critical part of that journey. We need a lot of it. We're mostly made of water, and if we had to ship it all from the Earth to Mars, it would be very expensive. So if there are vast reserves of water on Mars, then we could survive. And we know from various other missions that have been able to probe up to kilometers below the surface of Mars that there is lots of water in the crust. But Mars doesn't have a thick enough atmosphere to stop any liquid water on the surface boiling off. People may be aware, if you're trying to make a cup of tea at the top of Mount Everest, it would be a very lukewarm affair, because the lower the air pressure is, the lower temperature water boils at. And on Mars, with practically no air, it's equal to the Earth's atmosphere, 100,000 feet up. So there's very little air there at all. Water would just boil in a cup if you held it out in front of you. So to have frozen water below the surface and large amounts of it is very important. And, you know, we think if we could melt all the water below Mars and put it on the surface, if it didn't boil away too quickly, we could cover the whole surface hundreds of meters deep. So there's definitely a lot of water in Mars crust. And the question is, how easy is it to access? Because if it's easy, then human habitation becomes a lot more easy, a lot less expensive.
Now, this data was sent back to Earth from the NASA's InSight lander, and it allowed the scientists to estimate the amount of groundwater which is there, that's obviously good news for those tracking the fate of water on the planet. But, you know, will this reservoir of water be of much use to anyone trying to tap into it in the future? I remember on this program several years ago, you alerted us to the fact that Elon Musk, whom very little had been known at that point, would hope that by the end of the century there would be a colony of human beings on Mars. But is this an important development in terms of achieving that, or is much more required?
Well, I remember, it must be 20 years ago now, the front cover story on Astronomy Ireland magazine was that one lander had just brushed away a few centimetres of topsoil, and there was white ice. Now, it was frozen. It wasn't liquid water. And it also sublimated. That is, it went straight from a solid into water vapor. It didn't pool as liquid water once it was uncovered. And that's what we would have expected on Mars. So we know the water is very accessible. Even if it's frozen ice, that's easy enough to melt. There's very few clouds on Mars, so it's always going to be sunny. It's a bit further from the sun than we are. Sunlight's less than half as strong as it is here on the Earth. But there's plenty of it to melt the water for humans and for crops and for things like that. So finding, we think there are what we call brines, which are salty waters below the surface. Under pressure, water could exist as a liquid, as long as it's not exposed to the atmosphere or the vacuum of space effectively. So this is just another piece of that jigsaw that tells us there's going to be enough water for human habitation when we get there. It won't be as easy as scooping it out of rivers and oceans on the Earth, but no particular advanced technology needed. You don't have to extract it from rocks and difficult things like that. You basically just dig it up and melt it in a pot inside in a pressurized habitat where the humans and plants would live.
It's located in tiny cracks and pores in rock in the middle of the crust, and as you were saying earlier, quite deep, somewhere between 11 and 20 kilometres perhaps. But even on Earth, drilling that deep would be a challenge. So the challenge on Mars, I presume, is so much greater.
Well, if you want to access those aquifers, if you want to call them that, deep down, yes, I mean, I can't remember the deepest we've ever drilled on the Earth. The problem with drilling on the Earth is you go down, it gets hotter and hotter, and your equipment starts to melt. The rocks become a bit plastic. Things get a bit crazy. Mars has a thicker crust, or should have, because it's a much smaller body, half the size of the Earth. So I don't know if that it's practical to dig down that deep, but it does tell us that there's a lot of water in Mars crust. And as I said, 20 years ago, we had a front cover story showing that at least near the polar regions, there's ice just a few centimeters below the surface. So a shovel will do you. You don't need a drill. So you could bulldoze all this water out, melt it up and store it in storage tanks relatively easily. You know, doing this thing on Mars, so far from the Earth, with very little technology there, all of which you have to bring from the Earth, is not going to be inexpensive. But you mentioned Elon Musk, and the big thing for me is, and a lot of people think it's not going to be possible to land on Mars and live there in our lifetime. But Jeff Bezos, the Amazon boss, and Elon Musk, the world's richest man, like the two of them are always in the top 10, top 5 probably of the world's richest people. Not only are they rich, but they both own space companies that get billion-dollar contracts from NASA, i.e. they're very serious people. And they have said on stage in public together that they are going to put 1 million people on Mars by the end of this century. So Musk and Bezos want to have colonies on Mars by the time they reach retirement age. And there was a launch cancelled, postponed last night of Musk's new 400-foot tall rocket, which he intends using to ferry people to Mars. And he's powering ahead building it. He's getting contracts to land on the moon for NASA along the way. But he's basically doing it himself. And other governments want to do this as well. The Chinese have identified Mars as a target of those, of theirs. The European Space Agency would definitely get involved in an international mission. If you leave it to governments, it would probably go rather slowly, but Musk just seems to be powering ahead. And I know some experts in the field who say it can't be done, but he just seems to defy what the skeptics say. And so that's someone who'd like to see a colony on Mars. I'm hopeful that somebody succeeds, be it governments or private individuals.
David, water is necessary for life as we know it. That in relation to Earth, deep mines host life, the bottom of the ocean hosts life. No evidence as yet for life on Mars, but this development in relation to water, have the scientists identified a place that should perhaps in principle at least be able to sustain life? And then when we talk about the ambitions of the likes of Bezos and Elon Musk and others, that they're not out by the side of it, that they're, as you say, serious people, but their ambitions are equally serious and perhaps capable of fulfillment.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Bezos, when he was just a teenager, when he graduated from high school, going into college and gave the address to the whole school, he said back then, so this is long before he'd set up Amazon.com, that he thought the human race should use the Earth as a pristine garden to live in and do all the heavy industry out in space. And he's had that vision since almost a child, certainly a teenager, and is continuing today, literally putting his money where his mouth is. So, you know, these are incredible people that have done incredible things, and they're into space, and they're into landing people on Mars in particular. And they get great support from people like Buzz Aldrin, for Second Man on the Moon, who thinks we're wasting our time going to the moon and using it as a stepping stone to Mars. He thinks we should just go direct to Mars and get it over with. So there are lots of people in the industry on the pro side and a few on the nay side. And we just live in interesting times. And I think the next decade is going to show really whether it's likely or not. And we'll be following it all in Astronomy Ireland magazine, you can be sure.
Just in relation to the InSight lander, that was sent by NASA to Mars 7 years ago now, 2018, then intent on investigating the crust, core and atmosphere. It's recorded very important, if not indeed invaluable, information about Mars' interior. But would you say that the mission has exceeded expectations, that much more data was sent back than might have been anticipated by NASA and its scientists?
I can't really hear what you're saying, and you've gone extremely faint. I think you're asking about what was the purpose of the InSight lander?
Yes, that it was sent there, you know, back in 18, I think, and I'm just curious to know whether or not the information, the data sent back to Earth, exceeded expectations.
My thing is, yes, we had one speaker a couple of years ago who was talking about the information that InSight had sent back. It certainly was a successful mission. Some of them have gone there and failed completely. But the InSight lander definitely sent back lots of information. And it's a sort of a geology mission, in that it uses Mars quakes, the same way we do on the Earth, the probe what's in the Earth, to figure out what's going on inside Mars. And my understanding was very successful at that. And over the years, we've covered a few. But when it's sitting there on the surface, it can do lots of other things as well. Monitor the weather, and you know, if you're sending a probe to Mars to land on the surface, you wanted to do as much as possible. So my understanding is InSight was very successful, and its seismometer was really the first that was probing deep below Mars. I mean, you know, we're all pretty happy we know about the core of the Earth, but if you think about it, how do you find out what's going on thousands of miles through rock deep in the center of a planet? And it's a testimony to technology that we can use earthquakes on the Earth to probe that, and the same on Mars. So I'm not an expert on InSight, but I don't think I've ever heard of any of the scientists being disappointed in the information they got back. And even when the mission ends, they've still got all this data to analyze, and new discoveries can come out of that all the time.
David, just before you tell us about the public lecture next week, one of our listeners has been on making the point that Elon Musk is very busy now with the Trump administration and Doge and all of that. Do you think, has he taken his eye off the ball when it comes to Mars and getting rather excited about taking apart the public and civil service in the US?
Yeah, it makes you wonder. I was just thinking this myself. I mean, on Monday, we're going to find out from a world authority, Dr. Francis Butcher, about, you know, not just water on Mars, but he also studies water throughout the solar system. And does he have time to listen to experts like this talking about Mars? I mean, he's got a lot of skin in the game, so he should know a lot more about it than the people who come to our monthly lectures. And there are lots of experts on Mars. If he was hell-bent on going to Mars, you'd think he'd be studying this morning, noon, and night. Yet all we're hearing about him at the moment is his political wranglings. And he can't really be itching to become the next president of the United States, because he's not born in America. So it makes you wonder what his motivation is. Is this a sidetrack for him? Or has he just got so many people working on his mission to get to Mars, he can leave it to them and take a back seat and just get the occasional report? When you've got more money than anybody else in the world, I suppose anything is possible. Certainly a fascinating character, whatever you think about him, and with his fingers in all kinds of pies, from Twitter and X to the Department of Government Efficiency to Mars to SpaceX to Tesla. What an interesting guy, I think we can all agree.
Yes, proof if it were needed that political power is much more an aphrodisiac than Mars. Now, the lecture next week, David, just advise us about that.
Yeah, I would just end the Muslim by saying that in his inaugural address, Trump did say that they're going to go to Mars. Now, whether he's been inspired by Elon to say that, or it's one of his own pet hobbies, because he did set up Space Force during his first term of office. So I don't see America getting out of space, and from our point of view, that's a good thing. But the lecture itself, yeah, it's online, so everybody in the country can come along. You can get tickets on our website, astronomy.ie. And we're going to have Dr. Francis Butcher, who's from the University of Sheffield. This is the great thing about doing online lectures. We can get world-quality scientists to Zoom in, and we have been doing that. Every month we have one of these talks. And she's been looking at Mars in particular, what's going on at the South Pole, where there could be a lot of water. There's all, I mean, she will give us the very latest, because this is an area that she works in, and she's worked for the European Space Agency, who have landed craft on Mars in association with NASA, but she's also worked with NASA, the Canadian Space Agency, Japanese Space Agency, Italian Space Agency, and ice water on Mars is extremely important to them all. So we're really going to find out, I'm going to find out more than I know, just trying to cover these subjects for the magazine every month, from someone who is at the cutting edge of all this exploration. And there's water in other places around the solar system as well. The moons of Jupiter are icy moons, probably with deep oceans, liquid water oceans, and icy crusts. So there's enough water out there for sure for life to exist. How it gets started or not, that's another question. And how we might use it in the future for manned exploration, that's something she's going to talk about on Monday night. So I'm definitely looking forward to this talk.
Very good, David. Thank you very much indeed for joining us on the programme this evening. Always fascinating to talk with you, and many thanks indeed.